Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's Superhero Friday. I know it probably feels like every Friday is Superhero Friday at the moment, but this one, we've got bumper stuff. We've got the Snyder Cut is finally here. We've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Can't say it. The Falcon Show. And we've got even Marvel's Avengers is doing some stuff. But with me to discuss all that are two Midland superheroes. We've got Son of Godiva, Dale Driver.
Oh, I like that. I'm having that one. Yeah, it's good in the Twitter handle well. Straight away. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've got the wolf at the door, Matt Persler.
Hello.
Oh, lads. A lot of superhero stuff to talk about, isn't there?
What's your name, though? We need one for you. Where are you from? Enfield or something?
Yeah. Like Enfield, North London.
The Eagle of Enfield.
Eagle. what about the rifle? Because Lee Enfield rifles are from round the corner from me. So just the Enfield rifle. Call
there
me
we
that.
Go. Done.
There we go. Give myself nicknames. You should never give yourself a nickname. That is embarrassing. Right. Do you know what else is embarrassing? No, we won't start with that. The Snyder Cut.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's just start. We're not going to spoil it. Mm-hmm. Although a lot of the scenes are the same from a few years ago, we're still not going to spoil any plot to this film. We may talk about some of the stuff that was in the one from 3 years. Was it 3 years ago now?
2017.
Four, yeah. We're going to talk around it, so because obviously it's a four-hour film, which a lot of people won't have had the time in the past day to watch all of. Like me, I've only seen the first hour, so I can only speak to that. Whereas both of you, you've managed to get it done.
Mm. Yeah, all in one go as well, which surprised me. I did not expect to do that, but I was interviewing Zack Snyder a little while ago, so I had to watch it, basically, before I did it. But yeah, I was originally intending to watch it more like a TV show, and to its absolute credit, I managed to get through it all in 4 hours, which I think probably says, at least from my opinion, a lot about it's the improvements that it's made. Yeah, I think it is, for anybody that doesn't know, it is a 4-hour and 2-minute recut, like the director's original vision of Justice League, which obviously when it first came out was kind of like half his, half Joss Whedon's because of the studio change up and obviously Zack had to leave the project. And so this is, I guess the easiest way to explain it is if you've seen the original Justice League, it is that with another entire film's worth of stuff on top of it, which I guess for a film that everybody complained about because it obviously didn't have the build-up that the Avengers had, it didn't have those individual movies that went together, it sort of does a bit of that lifting, especially around Cyborg, who basically has no backstory really to speak of in the original film. And now basically has an entire film that's just sort of put into this film about, like, his backstory and how he's there. But it's not quite the same as having all of the lead-up that Avengers had. It is 4 hours of this story. It just happens to have kind of more material around why certain characters are there. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Steppenwolf, the main villain, has a lot more, like, motive and understanding of why he's here. And I think overall that creates for a much more coherent film. My caveat here is while I do think that Snyder has been able to make a reasonably good film out of sort of like what he has, I fundamentally do not like Zack Snyder's approach to superhero movies. And so I think there's still a lot about this film that I do not like.
So yeah, like I said, I'm only an hour in and I think I'm in a similar boat to you. It's just, I think there was never a world where I was gonna think this would become a masterpiece just because, yeah, like you said, Snyder's approach to making these films isn't what I'm looking for. And the main problem I had with these films is what you said, there was no build up these characters. Just, this is the first time we really see Cyborg, Aquaman, The Flash. That's half of the team. We're just thrown in, like, straight away. I haven't got to really the scenes. I've heard a lot of people are good with Ray Fisher and as his Cyborg. I haven't got to a lot of those yet, which I hear, like, do make a big difference. But I just can't feel they make a big enough difference to me at this point.
Yeah, they definitely...
I will care for these characters. Mm.
They definitely make a difference. And it's a case of, like, as you say, for Aquaman, there's a lot of stuff, like, under the sea in this film. Like, I didn't realise they'd shot anything with Amber Heard and Willem Dafoe, but that stuff is here. You're going to be able to see and understand a little bit more about why Aquaman is in the position, why he doesn't really feel like taking up the mantle of the King of Atlantis and stuff like that. It still is small parts of a four-hour movie that's doing a completely different storyline, so it does have a bit of that, so many things being jammed in the same pot. But by virtue of it being 4 hours, it does allow these things to breathe a little more. But it's still a four-hour movie that's spinning a million different plates in a, like, this weird kind of grimdark style he's got for superheroes that I don't actually enjoy.
No. Yeah. Like, that's the thing, it's 4 hours, and so far I've seen no real justification for that. The first hour, which is the first two parts, it's split into, I don't know, how many chapters is it in total?
Six, I think, overall.
I've watched the first two chapters. And yeah, I'm like, I don't want to be too down on it just because I'm bored of talking about how bad some of these are, but I was just bored. Like, that's like, and that's not what I want to be when I'm watching a superhero film. I was bored. Like, even the action sequences, I was like, this isn't doing a lot for me. I do like the Themyscira scene when they're, like, relaying the box from, like, horse to horse. That, I think, is a cool scene, even if a lot of the CGI isn't up to scratch. But, like, there's just too, like, this, he uses slow-mo so much. Like, there's so many, like, the first 10 minutes of the film is in slow motion with someone just screaming. Like, I don't know what, that's not setting a tone of, like, oh, I'm into this now. Like, it's not, like, that hard. Like, all, and I don't want to compare it to the Marvel films because they're a completely different beast, but they are what I prefer. Like, if you think every Marvel film, they open with, like, a really cool action scene that just, like, punches you in the face and, like, gets you, like, right, I'm having fun with these characters, the saying quips. This is the complete opposite. It's, like, a really slow, dark trudge, and I'm just, like, it made me realise why I don't like these characters. Yeah.
It's interesting because kind of like that slow motion stuff, I think, is very much Zack Snyder has a lot of things that are distinctly him. He has a very distinct direct style. And I admire that to a certain extent. Like, I like that he has a vision that he's very to the point where he has literally gone and managed to find $70 million from Warner Brothers to make the thing that he desperately wanted to make. And I sort of admire that as like an artist. And he's got this idea that for him, superheroes are gods among men. And I admire that that's what he wants to do. For me, they're not in the way that he almost puts them on these big pedestals. And I think superheroes are far more interesting when they're normal people that have weird abilities that you can sort of dig into. This all leads to Dale. Like, I know that we've both watched the 4 hours of it. And I think you agree with me that the film is far more coherent and far more watchable and actually delivers a film, but I know that you probably dislike it more than me.
So yeah, I wasn't a fan at all. I did it all day yesterday, but I did it in four different sittings. Like, I did a bit when I woke up, a bit on my lunch break, then a bit just before I had my tea, and then a bit later on in the evening. Only because I felt like it deserved a shot. Like, there was so much around it that I felt like it was fair to watch the whole thing before I critiqued it. But it definitely is more coherent. I agree with that. But I think it's still a coherent 5 out of 10 film. Like, I don't think it's a good film.
Yeah.
And yes, it makes a bit more sense now, but it doesn't make it a better film. I think my problems with it are kind of endless, to be honest. There's so much stuff and I could go into a lot of detail about it. But I think, Caddy, you touched on it a little bit with the intro. Like, I was never having fun. And this is a film about people who have got supernatural, like, amazing powers. And I never felt like I was having fun with them. Like, you know, in every Marvel film or even some DC films as well, you have sections where the superhero is having fun, or they're, you know, they're exploring their powers. And I never feel like I have that moment.
But
in
that's
these
what
films.
I was, like, always told when, like, I'm not saying I'm a screenwriter, but whenever I was at university and we did, like, screenwriting modules or something, like, even if you're telling, like, a fundamentally dark story or a sad story. You've got to have those peaks where there's joy. Otherwise, people are just like a constant like, oh God, this is tough. And it, like, even in like the darkest films you can think of, like, there's one-liners where there's little moments to smile. Someone's having a nice day or a birthday. Like, there's something where something nice is happening.
You need the problem with this film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the problem with this film for me is, I think the Flash is meant to be that character, that comedy relief. And to me, he's just utterly annoying. I hate that version of the Flash, like, so much.
It's a shame because I like Ezra Miller, but I don't like, and I wondered for a while, was that a Joss Whedon element? Because, and, you know, I say this as a fan of Joss Whedon's writing, but he has a particular quippy style that I know doesn't work for everyone, but also doesn't work for every character. And there was something about Flash the first time around that I didn't get on with, but I think he is fundamentally the same character in this version of the film. So, yeah, that hasn't worked.
No. I feel like, I'm not going to spoil it, but I'll say the first proper scene we see with Flash, that felt like an opportunity where it should be a lot of fun and to show, like, he's the lighthearted element to this film. And I thought that scene was, like, really poorly executed. I won't go into details about why, because it might spoil it, but I did not get that impression at all. And I just found the whole thing, like, miserable affair. Although, even though, like, down to the color palette, that's his color palette, right? He loves using that sort of style. But the muted colors and the brownness and the grayness, it just puts me off all the time.
Like, yeah, I feel like, you know, and it sounds like a very simple swap, and, you know, we'll never know. But, like, if you had Tom Holland in there instead of Ezra Miller, for me, I think you fundamentally got a much more likable film in general.
Yeah. But,
like, that's
I don't think that would fix it. I think it's the script for me, because I like Ezra Miller. I think, like, he's great in Perks of Being a Wallflower. I just, I think it's the way that Flash is written for me. If you, compare him to Barry Allen in the CW shows, who is a much more likable, and yes, the CW shows are a lot camper than the movies. You know, they're not supposed to be dark. They're almost the modern day equivalent of the 1966 Batman. But Barry Allen there is much more likable and less irritating. I think, is that there almost an element of irritation to Barry here, because he's supposed to be real and gritty, and sort of like people that quip in real life can be irritating. Like, I don't really know where the direction is there.
Go on, Kelly.
Go on. I forgot how dark it was as well. Like, in my head, it wasn't like, in my head when we watched Justice League at first, like, I didn't hate the Justice. I really don't like Batman vs Superman. I'll put that out there. I think that is atrocious. Like, a terrible piece of filmmaking. But, you know, that's another conversation.
Yeah.
I remember coming out of Justice League thinking, that is better than Batman vs Superman. I had a little bit of fun. It was okay. But I completely forgot how, like, in my head it was a bit more joyful. Maybe it's because they got to, like, it was only 2 hours, so the dark stuff didn't drag on as long. But I don't remember. I completely forgot about that whole scene from the lad from Game of Thrones just wanting to shoot a load of children uproot the world. I was like, I don't know really what he was planning on doing.
Yeah, that was a bizarre motivation, that was, Bruce Bolton. Yeah, and that's obviously the Wonder Woman scene as well. Even that, I think that's supposed to be like almost like a fun, like, reintroductory of Wonder Woman to the audience, right? And even that, it's so plagued by slow-mo sections. Like, I feel like that entire scene is in slow-mo when she's fighting. It just becomes a bit of a slog to watch. It's not fun. It's not energetic or exciting. I guess maybe when she's sliding on her knees and reflecting bullets. I know that's a bit spoiler territory, but, you know.
So this scene overall, because this scene is in the original version of Justice League, but it is shot slightly, like Joss Whedon, I think, reshot some of the camera angles and did some, like, different cut to that scene. But fundamentally, to me, that's where you see that Zack Snyder's vision for who these characters are doesn't line up with what I want from them, because I don't think this is not a spoiler to say that kind of like Wonder Woman defeats these people that are holding up a bunch of children, but the way she does it is incredibly violent. And for me, Wonder Woman is a character of peace. And she says to a little girl, like, she just looks up at her and goes like, oh wow. And then Wonder Woman's like, you can be whoever you want to be, as in to say, like, yes, you can be me, the person that just basically decimated and exploded a bunch of people in front of your eyes. And, like, Wonder Woman, you compare that to the Wonder Woman movies where, like, she would, like, lasso people out of the way and break their guns and leave them to be arrested by the authorities. They're two entirely different characters.
I think that's what it comes to. I'm not a fan of, Like, I don't dislike Snyder as a filmmaker in total. Like, he does have some things I like. I think he does have a lot of style sometimes. I really like, I still think 300 is a fun film to watch. Mm. It has its moments.
I love
really
Watchmen.
Like his version of Watchmen. Exactly.
Yeah,
Watchmen.
I like Watchmen too.
But I think the key with Watchmen is he didn't put his own spin on those characters. He literally used that book as a storyboard
exactly.
and didn't really put a twist on them.
I mean,
just his vision of this isn't to my taste, and I don't think it ever was gonna, like, this cut was never gonna fix that for me.
Surprisingly, so I know obviously there's talk about Cyborg being a more fleshed out character now and feeling like he's part of it more, but I found him to be wholly a miserable affair. Like, I wanted to see him before is obviously we do see glimpses of him before, but I wanted to see him having fun and being like a happy guy and stuff as well. Like, he's
understanding
just,
what he's lost, right?
Yeah, he's because just miserable all the way through the film. Whereas the one that I did flip on slightly was Superman, who I won't go into it, but I did enjoy Superman quite a bit more this time. It's probably the one character I did enjoy a bit more. I thought Batman obviously has the same problems what Matt just mentioned about Wonder Woman. I just fundamentally like, this version of Batman just doesn't sit right at all, especially towards the end. I think the last half an hour of him doesn't feel like how quick is he to talk about being Bruce Wayne to everybody all the way through it as well. I feel like that is
it's
just
a shame, because I quite like Ben Affleck, and I don't know if it's necessarily his fault. I think it again comes down to just the interpretation of that character.
Yeah, so I guess no matter how long the cut is, what scenes you use, it's always going to be the same issue. If you have those problems, you're not going to like this version. It's just a longer version of it.
I've seen a lot of Matt, you know, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people that hate this film. I wouldn't say I hate it like a strong, like, so far, like, I think, you know, five out of ten, like, two maybe pushing three stars, I don't know. But, I've seen a lot of also just mad, like, people saying it somewhat, like, please explain to me, if you do think this film is a masterpiece, I'm not going to take the piss out of you, don't worry. I want to know why you think this is a masterpiece, because I don't, like, what is the aspects of this you enjoy? I just want to know why, because you see a lot of people just go, oh, it's the best thing ever. I don't actually see many, I haven't seen many full-on, like, critiques or arguments saying, why? Just, like, why is this a great film? Like, a lot of people today I've seen saying, like, or you can, like, it's all, it boils down to Marvel versus DC, which is just boring and exhausting. Yeah. But it's like, oh, you've got your Marvel, like, popcorn films. Like, this is the true artist's, like, comic book film. It's the Lord of the Rings of,
is
like, comic
fuck?
Book films. It's like, no, it's not, because Lord of the Rings is very fun. but, like, yeah.
The only argument I've seen people making for why they like this is because they're saying, oh, we're finally giving some of these characters more screen time and getting to learn them. But I was like, but if you fundamentally don't like, I don't care about the comic book version of character. I care about what's in front of me on the screen. And if you fundamentally don't like this presentation of it, it's not a good film.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not a slight on Snyder at all, because I don't think it's his fault. And obviously what happened to him was a tragedy. But look, and fair enough, he probably has put a lot of passion into this film.
Mm.
For me, it doesn't show on screen. I don't see the passion in there. But
so
you know,
I think I do, but it's just not my bit. And it's like
it's
I say,
shared.
I think I rate it higher than any of you. But like for me, it's a 6 out of 10 because I think overall, like the story it's telling doesn't feel all that compelling. Mm-hmm. But I can see it as an artistic point. Like everything there is, it is a really defined vision. It's just a vision that I don't like. One thing I will say is, if you've got your heart set on the Joker stuff, please go into this 4-hour thing not expecting a lot, because most of this 4 hours is definitely stuff that he had originally shot. Like, if you don't know how films are made, filmmakers shoot an awful lot more footage than they ever end up using. And a lot of this is stuff that was originally shot, and you can tell because the quality of those is substantially higher than anything that got reshot. And some of that has to be re-CGI'd, and I think you'll find that the CG budget isn't quite enough, and there are shots in this film that look really quite bad in comparison to other stuff.
Yeah.
But the stuff that was reshot with Jared Leto, the stuff that was new material with Jared Leto, looks quite bad. It's not very well realized in terms of its CG. It was quite obviously done on a green screen set, but also adds fundamentally nothing to the film other than some quite cringeworthy, really poorly thought out dialogue.
100%. I think the the entire last half an hour of this film, I'm not going to say anything about it apart from it's just completely unnecessary and a mess. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't need to be. It feels fan servicey, like, all the way through it. It just feels it was like throwing shit at the wall, just like, let's just chuck everything in. Like, this is the one chance we got to remake this film. Even though it's talking about being 4 hours to get all this stuff in, it felt like it could have easily been a 3-hour film. Like, it didn't need to be 4 hours. It's so bloated even from the start. It's one minor spoiler to say, it's not really a spoiler, but there's like a 5-10 minute scene with Cyborg, like, looking at someone's bank account. Like, like a digital representation, of someone's bank account. And I was like, this did not need to be here.
I'm going to finish over the next couple of days and I can't wait for that scene. But yeah, it's just, I think everyone, like, it's been well reported, it doesn't really finish. It ends on a big cliffhanger. Like, it would just be intriguing to see what happens next and what, like, because obviously there was the whole campaign, which is another, yet again, another conversation about how this film even came about.
Yeah.
Like, what happens next? Do more films get made? Because you're going to be in this position now where you've also got The Batman coming out.
Which looks so much better now or later.
That is more...
that's
much more what
I will say, but, if you were looking forward to this film, I hope it's everything you want. Like, I genuinely have no... If these are the sort of films that you like, I have nothing against the fact that that's the Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman that you want to see. And I hope it does everything for you, but I also hope that this is the end of this chapter. Yes. And sort of like... That Matt, you know, I'd love if Matt Reeves' Batman, you know, is really good and paves the way for a new form of DC.
I like the trajectory with the Joker as well. I like this, like, just telling stories, you know, or one-off stories. They don't have to copy Marvel's format, you know, do your own thing. And I really like the idea of doing Joker and the Batman. And then I guess even Wonder Woman, like... was kind of, even though she's connected to that universe, she's still, it was still an isolated story. I like that approach.
And I can already hear the people saying, well, Matt Reeves is the Batman, looks very dark, and you said you don't want to see the dark version of his characters. For a Batman standalone film, I think that can work, because that his world is very much like that. And fundamentally, I have a lot more faith in Matt Reeves than I do Zack Snyder. So that's why I'm personally more excited.
The Dark Knight is really dark. I think the fundamental thing is, like, I just don't think the values of the Snyderverse Batman is the same as what I perceive Batman to be. And I just think he looks like he's having a bit of a boring time.
Yeah. You say the Dark Knight's really dark, but they still have scenes like, you know, when that one guy's trying to blackmail him and stuff like that. There's still elements.
There's fun. There's fun in there. Exactly. I think that's enough about that. I'm sure we'll talk about it again. Maybe we'll do a spoiler-filled section. I'm sure we'll have a lot of feedback about the Snyder Cut, I imagine. I do genuinely want to hear why you think it's good. Don't worry, you're not going to have the piss taken out of you. We're not nasty people. But yeah, it's just not for us, I think, fundamentally, is what we're coming down to. It's just not for us. Do you know what is for us, though? Because we're massive Marvel fanboys. no, we're not. Falcon and the Winter Soldier has returned today. No spoilers again, because I imagine a lot of people will be getting around to watching it or haven't seen it yet. But it is another good start to a Marvel TV show. Matt, you've reviewed this.
Yep.
You just can't stop reviewing the Marvel shows. Is that because you hate DC and everything to do with
He didn't review Justice League, did he?
What are we thinking there?
And I mean, if you're a fan of Justice League, that may be to your benefit, because we gave it an 8 because someone that did like it reviewed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking of 8s, that is also what I gave the first episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is 1 point higher than I gave the WandaVision intro. And part of that is I think Falcon and Winter Soldier drills a little bit deeper to the heart of what that show is more immediately than WandaVision does. And I know that that wasn't the point. WandaVision was supposed to disguise kind of what its true intents were through the sitcom thing. But I think by getting to the heart of the matter quite quickly, there's already quite a lot of interesting things about these characters that have been laid out. And it's definitely a character-focused piece. At least this first episode is. It might become a bit more action-focused and buddy comedy as the line goes down. But certainly it establishes it as a show about character and about who those people are, to the point that there's only two action scenes in this entire episode, and it's a 45-minute episode. So it's very much about, like, themes of honour and duty and responsibility from Falcon. We all know that at the end of Endgame, he was given Captain America's shield, which sort of suggests that Steve was like, hey, it's time for you to do this. And I think this show is going to explore the ideas of what that means to Falcon, how he's mm-hmm. going to, you know, approach that, and whether he even wants it, or how he'd like to perceive that. Mm-hmm. And then with Bucky, who I think has always been quite a 2D character so far, he's never had quite, you know, a huge amount, because he's a villain for one film, and then the other films he's sort of like a background character. Yeah. And so this really drills to the idea of, like, what if, you know, you'd spent a great deal of your 90 years that you somehow managed to be alive through, like, cryogenesis and special serums. What happens if most of that time you've been indoctrinated by, like, what spun out of the Nazi party? You've been going around killing a lot of people, but you've since been deprogrammed and are now trying to reintegrate into American society. And so there's loads of really interesting sort of digging around there, kind of like how he's... There's like a parallel to substance abuse where he's got like a therapist that's helping him through this. And it's like, well, with substance abuse, how do you get over the people that you hurt? But also the fact that you were a victim of like the drug system at the same time. Mm. And these are quite deep subjects for a Marvel show to sort of be exploring. But I really like that it's going there.
Yeah. I really like it. So I think it's similar to WandaVision. It's an exploration of grief at the start as well. Mm-hmm. But much more of a human, but like, obviously, Falcon and Winter Soldier, they are just men. They've had things happen to them. They have gadgets and bionic arms and such, but, you know, they are just fundamentally humans, whereas Wonder is a, you know, at this point, an otherworldly creature. Like, she can conjure up a whole town, whereas Falcon and Winter Soldier, yeah, they're just, they're both people who've lost their best. And you get the sense only friends in this mm-hmm. world, really, and they're now just alone, living, like, and you also get that sense that Marvel do so well of all these characters you think are interconnected, like Falcon and Winter Soldier. They've never really spent any time together. Like, they don't know each other really. They're not friends. They have a mutual friend who happened to be the most famous person in the world. But like, I really enjoy, like, yeah, seeing them basically try and live a normal life, because at this point we're not really, and we've not seen it. Like, what are, after Endgame even. Do the Avengers exist? Are they doing anything, or are they all just off living, trying to get on with their life now? And that's what we're seeing. There's lots of good scenes of them trying to adjust to normal life. And I really like Bucky in this. I think he, like, the scene, I don't suppose, there's a really good reveal in this that is just, like, heartbreaking, but, like, you get the sense, like, oh, he's a bit of an asshole, but then you're seeing, oh, he's not. He's just basically just riddled with guilt.
Yeah,
and that's
back to Justice League a little bit. The one thing that sort of made this stand out, because I watched them almost back to back. I watched one this morning. Mm. One thing that really made it stand out is the Marvel characters. They always feel like real people with this superhero element part of their life, whereas in the Justice League, it feels like that's all they are. You know, Wonder Woman is only that. Batman is only that. Whereas this, you're seeing, you know, these real people having conversations, sometimes about fantastical elements, but it always feels real. It always feels like grounded people talking in the world. And then they happen to mention things like a blip and fighting aliens every now and again. And it always feels legitimate. And I think that's the thing I enjoyed the most about it, especially coming off the back of Justice League, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm deep in so far. I didn't expect it to be, as much of a character study as well, for some reason. I thought it was more going to be like almost a buddy cop sort of situation, like solving cases together, working together. I guess I didn't even think about, well, there needs to be time to establish who these people are on their day to day. Like, oh, actually, no, let's not go into that because it's spoiler territory, but there's some stuff about Sam's life that you find out that really adds a lot more. Like, I'm so much more interested in him now than I've been in any of the films up to this point.
I also think the important thing that it does with Sam is, like, it actively recognizes that being African American in America has an impact on your life. And there's some stuff that, and
whether you're an Avenger or not.
Yeah. And it does this thing that Marvel, I think, does very well, where it kind of, like, it's almost quite casual about the way that it introduces these elements. But because I've watched this episode twice for review. And when I was watching it through again, I was like, that's actually that it really drills deep to the idea of kind of like, Sam still experiences racism through the system. It doesn't matter that, you know, he's a superhero that has saved people and been part of these big things. There's still some shit about America that affects his life. And it's done in such a small way that it's just an everyday part of his life. I am interested to see how that plays into this grander idea of a black man taking potentially up the mantle of Captain America and what that means for that country. Like, yeah. there's a lot of deep things that are explored in the way that Marvel does quite lightheartedly that makes it super accessible. It doesn't feel like it's too weighty, but it does have hidden depth.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I thought the ending was a fantastic tease as well. Like, I didn't really... I guess, to its benefit, I haven't really given this show much thought until I pressed play this morning. Like, it's kind of... I knew it was coming, but I never really thought about it. Didn't really watch the trailers. So I guess it's all feeling like a surprise so far, which is nice. Like,
I really like it. We said there's only like one or two action scenes, but I think the opening, which is exactly what I said Justice doesn't do, opens with a really fun punch in the face action scene.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. It's like, I think in your review you said it's like a Mission Impossible scene. For me, it was like a Nolan film as well, just like choreographed like that sort of style. And yeah, it was just a really fun twist on what Falcon can do, and it was just a great way to open it.
I love the return of George St. Pierre as well. Like, I haven't seen him for about six films. What's he been doing this entire time?
He's having a good time.
There's an interesting, because the way that opening is sort of like a mirror of the Winter Soldier, like the original film. And I think if you go into the show, it is the Captain America show, to the point that, yes, it's not directed by the Russo brothers, but it has that kind of gritty texture that both the Winter Soldier and Civil War have. It's got those political kind of undertones. It's got it doesn't build a lot of the main plot in this first episode, but what it does build of that plot is very spy thriller-ish. You know, it's a terrorist organization, and there's elements of kind of like national security and stuff like that. So those are my favorite of the standalone films. So I'm looking forward to seeing where we go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of that, and looking forward to my boy Zemo getting some screen time and inevitably having nasty things to say and do, probably, because he's a naughty boy, Mr. Zemo. Let's carry on with Avengers, because last night there was Square Enix Presents, a new stream that Square Enix are doing to update people on all their games. We're just going to highlight a couple of things that were big from that. I'm just going to kick things off by saying we finally have a roadmap for Marvel's Avengers. Six months after launch, we're finally getting some content that was promised in the weeks after launch. So it's been a rocky road for Avengers. I think that's well documented. There's a lot of fun stuff on this roadmap that I'm excited for, but it does boil down to that thing of every month or two, it looks like there's some cool things happening, some cool events, but what is going to keep me playing this game every day? So, if you didn't know, yesterday, the next gen version drops, and Hawkeye dropped along with his future imperfect storyline. I played through the main storyline missions last night. It's still only an hour to an hour and a half, 4 to 5 missions. It's sadly what I expected it would be, which is a few missions and a boss fight that has a tiny bit of story attached to it. And it's the same old story of Avengers for me. Is Hawkeye very fun to play? I really enjoyed his abilities. I think he's great fun. I like his interpretation of the characters, very good. You get young Hawkeye, you get old man Hawkeye, both very good. But yet again, after today, I'm like, well, what am I going to play in Avengers now for a few weeks? So what they do have coming up on this roadmap is they've got the Tachyon Anomaly event. Are we all excited for that? It's basically, it's an event that allows for multiple of the same hero to be on a team. Right. So you can have 4 Hulks, you can have 4 Iron Mans if you want playing together. Because that's one of the complaints about Avengers is, well, if I want to play Black Widow, and my mate's already playing Black Widow, I can't play Black Widow with him, so I'm going to have less fun playing as Iron Man.
Well, especially because it demands a lot of time to make those characters viable. Like, you can't just go, oh, I'll use Iron Man today because my Iron Man's like level 5 and he's piss poor. Yep.
Exactly. So this event allows, basically, there's going to be new cosmetics to get, but the main thing is it makes every multiplayer mission, you can now do it with any characters you want, multiples. And when I interviewed them them about this, I said, like, is this basically a testing bed? Like, can we see more of this in the future? And they basically said, we're doing it for this event and that's it for now. But I imagine if player feedback as I expect is, this was great, we want this. I could see this becoming a bit of a norm in the future.
But I guess as somebody who's not really played the multiplayer, doing that kind of goes against the vision of the playing as the Avengers, right? Then it just, it's another game at that point. But at the end of the day, you still want your player base to have fun.
Exactly.
That sounds like the way to have fun.
I know what you mean. It's that, is that thin line you have to cross. And but then, around the same time as the Black Widow movie coming out, there's the Red Room Takeover, which is basically Yelena, Black Widow's old adversary, is hacked a lot of the robots in the game, and you have to collect those and find out who's the source of this hack and what's going on. Also, the Harm Rooms in the games, which are big, like, basically your training rooms, they're going to be taken over as the Red Room, and there's going to be, like, hard challenges to do in those rooms. Yet again, sounds like another few hours of content to enjoy a month. So,
do you reckon they've been sitting on that because when the film got delayed, or what do you reckon?
I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't ask them that, to be fair. But just it's not an official. So it's not an official tie-in. There's no like MCU tie-in with this in particular. It just happens to be dropping at the same time as the Black Widow film. There are going to be some official MCU cosmetics coming into the game later in the year, so you can get your, like, Captain America from the film skin if you want and stuff like that, which I think people have wanted since day one, because I think we're at a point where everyone's favourite interpretations of those characters are the MCU versions, and that's what they want them to look like. Then there's some other, like, we're finally getting some high-level endgame missions, but obviously the headline is later this year there's the War for Wakanda expansion, which... The word expansion confused people because everyone's like, oh, does that mean we have to pay for it? It's going to be free. Don't worry about that. If you own the game, you're getting it for free. But I think the fact that it is an expansion speaks to me, because that makes it sound like it's more than just 2 hours of content this time. It's going to be
3 hours of content. and it's all about capturing zones and sitting on little spots for 4 minutes.
We can hope for more. I like Black Panther a lot. I like Wakanda a lot. I just want a new biome. We got a new biome with the... Hawkeye stuff, but it is just a wasteland. Like, it's a post-apocalyptic desert. It's not that interesting to look at, whereas Wakanda is just a fun place, I imagine, to be. There's a short teaser trailer that makes it look very nice, but there's lots of stuff coming with that. You've got Black Panther, a new villain. Claw voices the voiceover, so nice. We're getting at least one new villain in Claw, and a new enemy faction, which is his kind of troops, because so far we've only fought robots.
What about if Claw plays exactly like Hulk or an Abomination?
Don't. Taskmaster again.
Just a reskin.
And the power level caps increase, so at least that gives something for people who have maxed out their characters, something to achieve. Like, it was a weird moment last night, so Dale, I know you'd appreciate this. When I loaded up the PS5 version of Avengers, I got my second platinum just for booting up the game. That sweet feeling.
Yeah, I've had a few of them. It's good.
It was bittersweet, because do you know what? I wouldn't have minded if they said, here's 5 more trophies to go for in this version just to give me something to do in that game, because I want to play that game. But there's literally no reason.
Yeah.
Like, I played it for an hour with Greg last night. I was just like, it was nice to have a chat. But apart from that, I was like, what are we doing here?
See, for me, that's the fundamental fuck-up, is that you shouldn't need to play it to get to, like, something. You should enjoy playing the game. Like, I'm not playing Overwatch because I'm desperate to hit a new milestone. That's the beauty of Overwatch. There are no milestones in that game. It's just about playing it and enjoying it. Like, I think the mission design of Avengers is the thing that put me off it. Like, I love those characters, and I think there's some fun combat there, but everything it asked me to do was just go and sit on a point and collect them and wait for the point to get captured.
It's a tough one. I want them to turn it around. Like, this is definitely a step in the right direction. I don't think it's a big enough, like, until we see exactly how big the Black Panther stuff is, I don't think we'll have a grasp on, like, is it enough to bring people back in? Because at this point, there's not enough to turn the ship around completely, but I think it is at least heading in the right direction. And I know Anthem had a roadmap, and I know like where that went, but there is that thing with Avengers, is like, they did launch in a horrible time to launch. When I was speaking to them, they basically said the pandemic and working from home made every part of development take 3 to 4 times longer than it should have. So, like, they know they're behind schedule. They know there's lots to do. I just don't have the feeling they're giving up anytime soon, and I'm just hopeful it will get to a place. But
I don't think they can. At this point, they can't afford to. Because if you look at when you looked at Square's financials, so when Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, which obviously did absolute gangbusters, you know, every fan bought it and it had, you know, bought on a whole new fan base. And so Square's operating profit was through the fucking roof. And then you can see the moment Avengers comes out, their operating profit goes into the red and goes into the red by several million. It's just, it's been a real tough time, and I don't think they can afford, like, so much of, they literally, like, there are elements of, they let IO Interactive go as part of, like, when they were channeling funds into Crystal to make sure that they could make the event, because of course the Avengers was going to be the biggest game in the world, and then it came out and it wasn't. Like, they've got, they can't afford not to, basically.
But yeah, that's that. We'll see, what happens. I'm hopeful that, you know, this is me speaking, someone who probably likes this game more than most people on this planet. Even I'm not 100% convinced, so take that with a pinch of salt. Let's move away from superheroes, but not completely away from superpowers. A new Life is Strange game has been announced. Dale, this is your bag, isn't it?
Probably not the best person to talk about this.
Why don't me and Matt talk about Life is Strange? To be fair, I'm not the biggest Life is Strange fan in the world, but I don't actively hate everything about it like Dale does. I bounced off the first Life is Strange. I didn't dislike it. I just found it a little bit dull. It was a bit too slow for what I was looking for at that time, I think. But I'm into Life is Strange True Colors, the one they just announced, because I'm into that character. Her power is like psychic empathy, so she can read people's feelings and basically read their minds, essentially. And the setting looks really nice. And you know what hooked me in most, Matt, before you talk about what you want to see about this? The fact that it's just out and it's not episodic.
Because
I think that's what's put me off in the past, is like, I played the first episode of the first one and I was like, ah, it was okay, but I'm not desperately waiting for the next episode. Whereas this, out in one go. If I want to play it, I can play it in a weekend.
Yeah, so I've played two of the Life is Strange games in one go and one of them episodically. So I played Life is Strange 1 at the end of its run. I played it, I think it finished just about Christmas time that year that it came out. So I played it over the Christmas holiday. And then I actually did exactly the same with Life is Strange 2. Me and Joe played it over like the Christmas, not last Christmas, Christmas before. Whereas the only one that I have played episodically is actually Deck Nine's Life Strange, which is Before the Storm, and Deck Nine are back for this one, so it's not the same team as Life Strange 1 and 2. I actually think Deck Nine are probably the better studio. I think there's a lot about Before the Storm I liked. I think they had a great announcement yesterday, and that's because I can't think of many games that just fucking gets its audience as well as Life is Strange does. It knows exactly who it's targeting. Yeah. It knows that kind of,
it's like the Snyder Cut.
Well, yeah,
that's true. That's very true.
Yeah,
but it's I'm not in either of those audiences.
But it's sort of like Square overall, and then like obviously both Don't Nod and Deck Nine get that kind of like women are a huge part of that demographic. Kind of queer circles are a huge part, and it absolutely fully caters to those completely without. Oh, we're going to brush this stuff under the carpet. And if you play it, you'll find it. But no, we've got to put a man on the cover or something like that. Like, it absolutely knows kind of like who the people play. I love that it is so open-hearted that it is completely unabashed about, you say, it's empathy, and its superpower this time is empathy. Whereas before, it's kind of been like being able to reverse time and stuff like that. It's really doubling down on what the Life is Strange games are about, which is about sort of the human condition and sort of like trying to just get your way through life, and life is difficult. I think it's cool that it opens on, so Alex Chen, who's the main character, like, it is, they've already said that it's about like the death of someone close to her, and so that won't be a twist now. It's kind of like, okay, well, what are the twists that are going to be going down the road? As you say, it's all, it is one game. It's split into chapters, so it will have that episodic feel and have presumably cliffhangers through. But I also like that it's set in a town that looks quite open, so it might have a bit, whereas the other games have been in the Telltale mold of kind of like, it's an interactive movie. One of the things I used to really like about old school point and clicks like Monkey Island was they were essentially open world games. Like, you had a whole island and you could just go around it trying to figure it out. I like the idea of going back to something that's like, here's the town, and there are all the people that you're going to need and all the items you're ever going to need to kind of solve whatever mystery that game poses. And just being able to freeform sort of work that out and go from bit to bit. So yeah, there's a lot, and like it's got all the kind of indie folk music choices that I dig.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like it says a lot when I enjoyed this trailer despite it having an acoustic cover of Creepy, yeah. Which we don't need any more of those. Radiohead nailed it. Everyone stop singing Creep. It's not a love song.
It's definitely not a love song, but I mean, I don't think it's been presented as like Life is Strange always has the central character is a bit feels they're yeah. out of place. And I know there's a more sinister side to Creep, but
yeah. it fits Life is Strange. Yeah. But I was more thinking back to like the X Factor days when like people go on and sing Creep. I'm like, you're not really getting what this song is. And it annoyed me, frankly, because stop getting Radiohead wrong. it's what I basically sound like right now. But yeah, I think I'm going to give it a go. It's out in September, I think, mm-hmm. isn't it? So it's not far away.
And it's all mo-capped, so it'll actually look good. Life is Strange has never looked great and has always been kind of like hand animated, so it's always a bit stiff, but this time around. And also they're doing remasters of the other mm-hmm. ones, so they're doing Life is Strange and Before the Storm, which apparently has new animation, so I'm hoping they've done a bit of mocap for those as well, because they deserve it.
Lovely. The last Square game we're going to talk about is... Well, we'll talk about it briefly, because we frankly don't know a lot about it. But we do know that Project Athia is now called Forspoken, which looks a bit mad. I'm trying to get a grip on what exactly it is.
But is that like a motherfucking dragon?
It is. It blooming is, Matt. I like that was just in there. Nice touch. But it's about a woman. It looks post-apocalyptic, but she's wearing modern clothes. So it's like a fantasy post-apocalypse set, but she's wearing very much like... She's wearing like trainers and jeans, as far as I can see.
Kind of that urban fantasy feel that's kind of like quite popular in like YA literature at the moment.
Yeah, and we got a little, like we've barely seen anything, but I'm into it. Like the traversal looks ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it looks
sure
like Final Fantasy 15 because obviously it's the same engine as Final Fantasy 15, mm-hmm. and a lot of the developers are from the Final Fantasy 15 project. But yeah, what did we get? 20 seconds of footage. I'm into it.
Yeah, should be big like tendrilled roots out of the ground to destroy something. I mean, yeah, I'm into it. I'm hoping it is like, a good action RPG and not too like in the weeds, no pun intended, like Final Fantasy, like too much like menu management system and skill points. I'm hoping it's more like Square Enix's almost like Horizon sort of game.
You want it to be closer to like a Platinum game, right? Nier Automata has got like its RPG elements, but is fundamentally an action game with some RPG stat side.
Yeah. I'm into it. I think they said 2022, which means probably 2023. So we'll see. But yeah, into it. Thank you, Square. It's just nice these days to have any sort of stream or event or announcement because, it's just nice to hear stuff. Do you know what's also nice? The Endless Search. Inside is the UK IGN crew. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? The son of Godiva. What quiz do you bring us today?
Wow, I bring you a quiz from another quizmaster, from someone who's written in for a quiz, and his name is Alexander Fisher. So thank you very much for sending this in. This one caught my eye, and you'll see why. We'll get to it in a little bit. Didn't mean that to rhyme.
Grot. Right.
So Alex says, I assume it's Alexander. Sorry, I'll full name you from now on. Alexander says, endless search submission for you. Hope it entertains. Kisses. So the name of his quiz is called The Goof is Loose. And it's a very familiar format, an IMDb-driven format, but this time we're talking about the goof list, or the, what, they call them goofs? I guess it is. Lists of goofs, yeah. We've used, IMDb has a list of goofs for films where users have pointed out errors. Sometimes these are editing mistakes, sometimes historical inaccuracies, all are pedantic. Guess the film from the list of the goofs. So the interesting thing he's done here, which is why it caught my attention, was, obviously, some of the times character names have to be mentioned in these goofs. So I keep saying goofs, Goofs. I keep saying goofs like it's VE on the end.
Goofs.
So yeah, sometimes I've got character names, but he's replaced all the character names with names of IGN UK podcast hosts or previous hosts as well, which I think makes it a little bit of fun. So there's three for each. Scoring system is usually the same. 3 points for correct answer after one, and then so on and so forth. Right, let's do this. I'm just going to draw a little table so I can keep score.
Do it.
Okay, film number one. The world map on the wall of the radio room, as well as the one in the exercise room, shows countries with present-day borders.
Ooh.
That is quite tough. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed this. These are all films, aren't they? These
They're all films, off IMDb. Yeah. I don't suspect.
What are the rooms again?
So, the world map on the wall of the radio room, as well as the one of the exercise room, shows countries with present-day borders.
Exercise room. My head's gone to Inglourious Bastards for some reason.
It's not Inglourious Bastards.
It's definitely a historical film, though, right? Because it's
got to be like pre-1990. It's got to have like at least Soviet stuff going on.
Mm. Is it like the
exercise room?
What's the one with Cumberbatch in the
thing? Theory of Everything?
No, the one about the Enigma.
No, that's Redman.
Cumberbatch is not in this film.
Oh, The Imitation
Game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not that. No.
It's not that one.
That's a good film. I like that film. Mm-hmm. I'm moving on to the next one.
Yeah.
Here's the first name drop as well.
Ooh.
Which is a weird one to go for first, but here we go. When Lucy James escapes from her bodyguard into a lift, she raises her middle finger at him. Not a gesture an Edwardian lady would use.
It's definitely one that Lucy James would use. I can tell you that.
So I'll read that
again. Is it The Prestige?
It's not The Prestige. When Lucy James escapes from her bodyguard into a lift, she raises her middle finger at him. Not a gesture an Edwardian lady would use.
Into a lift? So it's a point.
Would have a bodyguard. Oh, this is annoying.
Is it like The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
No.
An Edwardian bodyguard. The Mummy?
No, it's not The Mummy. Oh. Right, I'm moving on to the last clue. Yeah. The tune that Tamar Hussein and Lucy James danced to on the steerage is called The Hills of Connemara, written by Sean McCarthy, who was born in 1923, 11 years after the IGN UK office sank.
Oh, Titanic. It's Titanic.
It's Titanic, yeah. Who said that first? Was that Cardi?
Cardi.
I hadn't read that one in advance, so when I got to the IGN UK office bit, it caught me by surprise.
Okay.
All right. I think we're actually going to get some actual host names in the next one. While Joe Scribbles is travelling in outer space, the stars in the background are blinking. In reality, the apparent blinking is due to the atmosphere between the stars and the observer. So in space, this phenomenon would not occur.
a lot of space films, isn't there? Interstellar?
No.
A Star Wars film?
It's not a Star Wars film,
no. Gravity? I'm just going to name space films. Let's carry on.
Ad Astra.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on. When the Chris Tilly bot finds paint on the floor, it stops. And when it stops, you hear the sound of tyres screeching. Yet the Chris Tilly bot hovers around on the ground.
Moon?
No. See why you thought that, though.
It's not Interstellar either.
Hovers a floating around. Robot.
So I'll read it again. When the Chris Tilly bot finds paint on the floor, it stops. And when it stops, you hear the sounds of tyres screeching. Yet the Chris Tilly bot hovers above the ground.
Screeching.
There's something in space that uses paint and has a flying robot.
Alien?
No.
There's nothing in that. Whatchamacallit, what's the film I'm thinking of? What's the film I'm thinking of? Oh, it's totally gone out of my head.
If you can't think of the film name, then you definitely haven't got it.
Okay.
That'll make sense when we get to it. Okay, yeah. The last one. The Waste Cube.
Event Horizon, that was the film I was thinking.
You're struggling to figure that. It's all-time classic, mate.
Just didn't come to my head.
The Waste Cube that Joe Scrabbles produces during the...
Wally.
It is Wally, yes. There we go. <Kind of good. laughs> So, do you remember the bit with the paint when there's that little robot who's got like the brush on the end
it's
of his hands?
It's been a long time since I've seen Wally.
Ooh, I watched it not long ago. It's good.
It's very good.
It's a good film. Yeah. All right.
There's Moana.
Oh, God, you and Moana. All right, we're moving on. When Simon Cardi visits Daniel Krupa in February, it's obviously winter with snow on the ground. Yet after a brief meeting, they venture out onto a balcony where it's summer with green foliage and no breath visible.
Oh, that does sound like something we'd do.
What, change seasons?
Yeah, we're masters of the season. I mean, that could be anything.
I mean, yeah.
The girl with the dragon tattoo.
No.
Picking a film that had some snow in it.
That's always snowy, isn't it? Yeah. It's not.
Skyfall.
No.
Did that? I don't know.
Inception.
I feel like I'm going to move on.
Yeah. Could be anything.
When Matt Perslow is in jail and traps the guard, he begins the scene writing down his tricks. All 10 fingers are visible when 2 of them should
prestige.
Be partially got. It is the prestige.
Prestige.
All right. And the last one on this is when Simon Cardi and Jesse Gomez, both played by Hugh Jackman, are in a circular tracking shot together, Simon Cardi wobbles up and down slightly, revealing him to be an inserted visual effect.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There we go. So I mean, Kruger was David Bowie in that scene, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So that's fair. That's a treat for him.
All right, the next one. Tesla. Dale Driver has a pronounced Scottish accent at the start of the film, which deteriorates markedly just in a couple of scenes. By the end of the film, he has an upper class English accent.
That's bizarre. Who could that be? Did Sherlock Holmes, did he do something like that?
No.
It's got to be someone.
He might
like
have
that.
Done that, but it's not Sherlock Holmes.
Danny Jr. has a terrible Welsh accent in Dr. Doolittle, but...
Yeah.
A Scottish accent that turns into...
upper class English accent within a couple of scenes.
I feel like I'd know this film off the top of my head if I...
I know this film very well, and I've never noticed that or never thought about that. So
they did say they were pedantic.
Yeah.
I think we need another clue here.
Okay, all right. Keza McDonald says that she's a vegetarian. Later in the movie, she is seen about to take a bite of Jell-O. Jell-O's key ingredient is gelatin, which a vegetarian would not eat.
I mean, you can get vegetarian jelly,
can't you?
So maybe
that's very pedantic.
Or is this set in a time when vegetarian alternatives were not available?
Oh. Maybe.
Who knows? Scottish. Oh, is this Matilda?
No.
For some reason, I had the Miss Trunchbull had a Scottish accent at the start, and it went.
Does she?
No, she probably doesn't. Probably all in my head. I don't...
Okay, I'm going to move on.
Who's the vegetarian in Matilda?
Someone could have been. Yeah. Matilda looks like she could have been.
Okay, I'm moving on.
Miss Honey.
It's not Matilda. When Alex Simmons is holding the baby, When Alex Simmons is holding the baby Gav Murphy, he asks Stuart Reed, "What species is this?" And he replies, "What species is this?" And he receives the reply, "It's a Welshman." In fact, Welshman is the genus of the animal, the genus of the animal, not the species.
Jurassic Park?
It is Jurassic Park, yeah. It was all on the table there on that last one. The Welshman bit is like, yeah.
Jell-O.
Who's Scottish?
Who has a Scottish?
So I guess they're talking about, what's his face?
Hammond.
Yeah.
Scottish, does he?
In the first couple of scenes, I guess, is when he goes to Grant at the dig site and proposes.
I mean, yeah, he does have elements of
a Scottish accent then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why Attenborough chose that. Use your voice, mate. There you go.
All right.
Who's a vegetarian? Is it the girl?
Yeah, the young girl. I forget her name. She's the one eating Jell-O, isn't she?
There we go.
What is her name? It's Timmy and... Oh, that's really wonderful.
Doesn't matter now.
It does. Matter. I need to know.
Anyway. I'll search for you.
But anyway, it's 5-0 to Cardi right now. This is just for fun, this last one. Tom Butler is seen holding a Granny Smith apple. Granny Smiths originated in Australia in 1868, around 150 years after the events of this film.
Her name is Lex, by the way.
Ah, there we
Alex,
go.
Alex, yeah. Lex. Sorry, say that again?
So Tom Butler is seen holding a Granny Smith apple. Granny Smiths originated in Australia in 1868, around 150 years after the events of the film. So you know when the film is. You know when the film's based.
Is the Granny Smith that distinctive?
I know a Granny Smith when I see it, mate.
It's got a distinctive crunch, so maybe they heard it. I imagine in my head the Granny Smith was like, I don't know, in the late 1800s. So I'm thinking this is like a quite an old film. I don't know.
I mean, it tells you almost exactly when the film is based.
Yeah, it's 150 years before the
1868. So it's like 1700.
I completely ignore that fact. Just me trying to show off when I know when the Granny Smith was. Shakespeare in Love? No. I'm trying to think of any film from that era.
Okay,
the Other Boleyn Girl.
It might not be a true story, by the way. When Luke Kamali and the Robert Anderson are leaving the house from the promotion ceremony, automobile track tires can clearly be seen.
Oh, as in, like, there's been a car on set.
There's been a car there when there shouldn't be a car. That's just basically an extension of the previous one, isn't it? It's like, it's old.
Set in the 1600s.
Pirates of the Caribbean?
It is Pirates of the Caribbean, mate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The last one is, when Rory Powers arrives on the HMS RKG to fight the cursed pirates, some of the naval personnel are fighting no one because the CGI skeletons weren't put in.
There we go.
I thought it was a nice bit of fun.
It's
Thank you very much.
Different game. It was a fun game. I enjoyed it. Yeah, good stuff.
Cheers, Alex.
Thank you. Alexander, please. Yeah. Is his full name.
He does actually put Alex Fisher.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Mr. Fisher. Let's do that. why don't we have some feedback? How about we do that? Remember, if you want to send yours in, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com and tell us why we are Snyder Cut haters.
Okay. I'll start. We've got one in from Tom Smith who says, "Hey guys, listened for a long time and never felt the need to write in until now. The talk of Conkers reminded me of a conversation I once had with my wife's now deceased granddad, Joe. I had to verify this with my father-in-law as I was doubting I remembered it rightly. Joe was an NHS dental technician and once took the time to hollow out a Conker and fill it with some super hard dental stuff. Enamel, I guess. Probably a flagrant breach of the official Conker rules, but a strong effort nonetheless, and a great use of taxpayers' money. Not sure how it fared, but I'd like to think it's still going strong somewhere. Cheers from Tom."
That is outrageous, but you got to admire the lengths that have been gone to there. How do you, like, patch it back up, though, and cover the Conker like, back? How do you
seamlessly? You inject in through the hole, maybe.
I suppose, yeah, rather than... How do you hollow out a Conker, though, through a hole? Like, sure you have to...
Can you, like, melt it? I don't know. I have no idea.
Can you melt a Conker?
Wait, maybe
this is the stuff we need to know.
Maybe he patched it back together again. But I like to think that after his first few rounds, the outer shell of the Conker shattered, and then you've just got this ball of, like, enamel, whatever it was.
Yeah, white stuff. And they're like, what's going on here then? They get arrested. That's it. I don't ever condone cheating, but I do condone ingenuity.
So, do you remember when you guys were talking about Conkers recently, it reminded me, when I was a kid, obviously it might surprise you to know that I was big into my Conkers. My dad was very much like take me out Conker picking sort of situation. But do you remember when you drill the hole for him? Did you guys have the drill with it was like a hand operated drill?
With a crank on the top.
I don't
know if I ever did the drilling. I don't know if I was ever allowed to do the drilling.
I thought about them and I thought I haven't seen one of those hand operated drills in probably 20 years now. Mm-hmm. Because of that. A relic of the past.
I do remember. Lovely little boss. Were you a Conker champion, Dale? Were you good at them?
I remember being okay, but I don't remember competing in... There wasn't a formal competition. It was just more have a go with your mate. And that was about it.
Yeah, that's true. Did you do the vinegar technique there?
I did, and I did the oven technique as well.
There we go. Everyone knows. Everyone knows if you're... Well, I think everyone in the UK knows. Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone's confused as everyone else. Right. I have a piece of feedback here from someone I forgot to put the name on it. Toby Summers. There we go. Says, hi, IGN UK team. Long-time listener, first time writing in. A lot of people seem to do that. There we go. Where are the people that have not been listening for long but writing all the time? That's what I want to know. After listening to last week's podcast and hearing the piece of feedback about the game for an event that hasn't happened, it immediately made me think of what has happened with the F1 game and the Vietnam Grand Prix. Like most years, Codemasters release a new F1 game to reflect the current season of the Formula One calendar, but because of the pandemic, the real-life races were moved, postponed, and cancelled. But because the game was being developed before this happened, it has the season how it would have been without lockdown. This includes a new circuit for 2020, the Vietnam GP, which was one of the races which was cancelled. However, when the 2021 season was announced, there was a distinct lack of the newly built Hanoi Street Circuit. Well, it turns out the race will likely never happen due to the planner for the GP being heavily involved in corruption. Oh, so the place you can see the F1 cars drive around this racetrack is in F1 2020 game. So not only is this a game for an event that hasn't happened, it is for an event that will likely never happen. Kind regards, Toby from Portsmouth. And for God's sake, respect the sea. That is very interesting. So the only way you'll see F1 cars drive around the Hanoi circuit is in a game, because it would likely not happen in real life.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, like, oh, there's loads of fictional races in games, but this one was fictional, only, like, well, fictional after the fact.
Exactly. This race course exists in real life, but won't be used.
That's crazy.
Don't do corruption, kids. It's not big and it's not clever, okay? That's the lesson we've learned from this, I think.
And if you get away with it, then it's pretty clever.
What have you been doing?
Right, okay, this email is from Sean.
Selling enamel conkers to kids.
Oh, yeah. I've got some conker techniques that I'm not declaring on the podcast, all right? I'm keeping them secret. This is from Sean Cottrell, and he says, sup, fellas. First time, long time, and all that jazz. Love the podcast and kept me sane during the night shift. I think Cardi and Matt have both mentioned about watching films when they're a kid that they probably shouldn't have. I know when I was about 9 or 10, I watched Event Horizon with my parents, and let me tell you, I shit myself. My parents gave it the typical, it's not real, which was about as reassuring as a warm fart on the day after a night of drinking and curry. Do you guys have any instances where you were watching a film, TV show that you were too young to watch? Side note, that Mad Bastard's Caligula declared war on sea. Don't be like Caligula. Respect the sea. There we go.
Always never be like Caligula. I don't know if I do remember a similar thing when I was 9 or 10. Like, basically, it was one of those days where I really didn't want to go to school, and I basically told my mum, I'm not going to school, I'm not doing it, I don't feel well and all that.
Yeah.
So I spent the whole of the morning watching Gladiator when I was like 9 or 10, which is quite a violent film. I was 9 or 10, but that got me up until like lunchtime, school time, and then my mum, when it finished, was like, right, you're going to school now, and I went in for the afternoon, because my primary school was only like a 15-minute walk away, right. So I could do that.
Told everybody about Gladiator when you got into school.
And my mum regularly brings this up whenever I put like Gladiator on or something, like she'll bring this up, and I still say to her to this day, I learned more from Gladiator than I did from that half day of school, and I'm convinced about that. I learned about the Roman Republic, I learned about how to make a film, I learned about, I don't know, tigers. I learned a lot.
My younger years was like full of all these sort of films, because before I was born, my dad had a video rental shop that back in them days, in the late 70s, early 80s. Some people would buy a load of videos and copy them all and then go around door to door, like delivering them. He did that as a business for a while. But since then, the business, he'd stopped doing that. And he'd gone to work in a factory after that, but he still had all the videos left. So we had drawers full of all these films. And I would just, when I had days off school or whatever, I'd go through and just pick random films. This is how I watched The Exorcist when I was about 12, I think, something like that. The funny story about that one is I'd seen Poltergeist on TV late at night, and I thought it was that, and I wanted to watch that again. So I saw it and picked up and put it to play. And then about halfway through, I realized this is not that. This is very something very else. But yeah, I watched Aliens is like one of my favorite films, and I watched that probably when I was about 9, something like that. Mm-hmm. Probably shouldn't have seen it at that age, but it's kind of desensitized me a bit as an adult now, I think.
Yeah, my memory is, I don't know if I've said this one on the podcast before, but when I, about 9 or 10, was when, can you remember when Furbies were a big craze?
They're not that scary, mate.
Yeah, but my dad was like, oh, Furbies are like gremlins. And I was like, I don't know what a gremlin is. Like, I'll go and buy you gremlins. So he went down to the local Blockbuster and, like, bought a copy of Gremlins on VHS from them. And he gave me that. And obviously the start of it is very like a Furby. And it was like, oh, this is quite a cute little Muppet thing.
Yeah.
Probably a bit too early in my life to see a gremlin, like, forced into a microwave and erupted like a volcano.
It gets dark towards the end of the film. There's that gremlin that, like, scratches that woman's face. And it's really vicious. I remember, like, I saw it as a kid as well. Like, being quite
I love Gremlin. Like, it is one of my favorite films. I think it's such a cool, like, idea. And it's a very grim, dark fairy tale. But as a 9-year-old, when you don't kind of get what dark humor is, like all of the stuff with Gremlins, that whenever I used to turn the lights out, I just used to imagine, like, there's a scene where I think, it, you know, Stripe, like the key sort of gremlin, he's hiding in the cupboard with the medical supplies in, and Billy goes to open it and he sort of kicks the door open and slices him open. And that I remember being, for like probably around sort of like 10 to 12 years old, every cupboard I opened in the dark, I would assume there'd be a gremlin in it.
They're still
got that music
there
in your head all the time.
I think I can see something in the drawer behind you there, Matt. So just watch it.
I'm not looking.
Oh, there we go. That was a pleasure. I have had a lovely time. Mm-hmm. What music should we have? Creep. The Snyder. I'm not.
There
playing
are a
Hallelujah.
Lot of.
I refuse to play Hallelujah at the end.
Oh,
of this.
Piss off! Yeah, can we play the proper version of Creep? Can we do that?
Yeah, let's just play Radiohead's Creep, because that's a good song. There we go. And what a jolly way to see out the end of the podcast. Bye bye.
Boy.
See ya. So fucking special. I wish I was special, but I'm a creep. I'm a widow. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.